countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Now with our highest ever readership of 321,000 weekly readers. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing you expert commentary and analysis on what your future farm payments will look like.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, big challenges facing the Irish potato sector ahead of World Congress in Dublin. We hear how sustainability in food production is now the rule rather than the exception, and the success story that is Irish agri-tech business on the world stage.
Text 51551, email countrywide at rte.ie and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
But first, a special good morning to everybody in County Clare taking part in this weekend's Burren in Bloom Festival. It's a packed programme of walks and talks. And this morning, one man, Phelim Harty, is welcoming visitors to his land to see the pond which he's developed in his Hare's Corner, a part of the Burren Bio project that encourages landowners to leave a corner of their farm to nature. Now, Phelim is a wetland systems environmental consultant and he works with local farmers to develop ponds on their land. So our reporter Lorna Siggins knew this would be no ordinary pond, because on the wettest day of the week she had to pull on her wellies and go for a walk with Phelim along a path through woodland to find a Hare's Corner full of surprises.
I just heard a cuckoo. Am I imagining it, or
no,
we did?
Not at all. We heard a cuckoo, right? It's lovely. Every year. It's funny, about 2 weeks ago was a first for lots of things. There was the first cuckoo and the first swallows and the first orchid and, you know, the first orange tip butterfly.
I think the cuckoo's just stopped because he knows that the radio's here.
On cue.
Yeah. So we're just coming out of the woodland now. Oh, isn't that beautiful? That's a pretty big pond.
It's actually lovely. It's really nice.
You've even got an island in the middle.
Yeah, so what we did basically is there was a marshy area to one side that I dug when we bought the field first in 2012. And then there was a willow area to the left, which we'd done at the same time. The willow area had never really worked. It had been quite nutrient poor. And so the willows in the middle were very stunted, even though the ones at the edge now are, you know, 6-7 metres high and doing very well. Those are biomass willows. So they're really useful for sewage treatment systems and the like. So or for water filtration or anything like that. And they're great for windbreaks as well. So basically what we did as part of the Hare's Corner, we got in a digger, pulled back the willow area and turned it into a pond, and we deepened the marsh area a little bit. So you can still see the fringes of the old marsh at the side there, so you can see the bulrush pushing up there, and various, and there's yellow flags at the far side. But there's still willows at the side, so that habitat is still there. And then the water comes in at the far end, pushes through the pond and out just here behind us. The plants that are coming up will be water starwort. There's wetland plants that were here already, such as we've got greater pond sedge, bulrush, yellow flag iris, branched burrweed, and those would have all been plants that were there before. The main thing that I'm noticing new is the water starwort, which was there lower down, but it's much more noticeable in the open water. It's still early days. I'm expecting that the pond perimeter will probably thicken up a lot over time.
Right.
And so there's whirligig beetles, and I'd expect to see water boatmen and pond skaters, water measures.
Oh, right.
And we've already seen dragonflies around. Wagtail, of course. So will we go for a wander around?
Yeah.
And so you can see a pond skater there.
Oh, yes. Oh, look at him.
The pond skater does is he literally walks on the water.
Right.
He literally walks right across it. So the surface tension, his feet are slightly webbed.
Yes.
With the very fine hairs.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually sit on top of the meniscus of the water. So he literally walks on water and moves around in that way.
As we walked in our wellies in the lashing rain, Phelim explained how Burren Bio provides a certain amount of funding to dig out an existing drain or to install a new pond.
He also has an orchard as part of his Hare's Corner. He has apple trees planted on mounds because he says they don't like to get their feet wet. And he has a permaculture design where he has fennel to attract insects. He has geraniums and daffodils and calendula to keep the grass down. And he has comfrey to pull up nutrients to keep the trees happy. And he explained to me how beavers would be so welcome on this part of the landscape.
What are we looking at here?
So you can see the outlet point from the pond just there through the trees.
Oh, yes.
So yeah. The water comes in from the drain, and traditionally the water always went into an old land drain in this field. And so all I've done really is clear around the entrance to the land drain. And there's a capstone placed over the top of the briser pipe. And so what the capstone does is it gathers debris. So it functions like a mini beaver dam. So when there's very heavy rainfall, debris gets clogged between the stone and the pipe, and the water level rises right up. So you can see where the old flood line is there.
Right.
And that's holding water back into this pond area, deepening the pond, but also slowing down the release of flood water into the wider catchment. Right. And helping to filter it more and helping to regulate the wider catchment hydrodynamics.
So beavers definitely have their uses now, if you had a few beavers here.
Oh, absolutely. I need to go through 10 years of paperwork to get a license. But beyond that, I'd love it. But I think that to get beavers into Ireland, we'd need to do some quite specific things first. I think first we'd need to pay farmers properly to put in good wooded riparian buffer zones. So if you have 10 or 20 metres of thick tree cover alongside every river and drain and stream in the country, that's paid for because of the services that it provides to the wider country in terms of flood relief and filtration, then you could begin to think about bringing in beavers, because all of a sudden there'd be trees there, and if you did make dams, there'd be areas that could flood without causing trouble for livestock and for grazing lands or for arable crops.
There was a plan to bring beavers in Scotland.
Beavers are into Scotland and in Devon and in Wales. Yeah, exactly. And for small mammals that are really good at swimming, I'm not convinced that they were never in Ireland. Do you know, since they travel so freely around Britain, you know, they've swum down from Scotland down to Wales and swum upriver following pheromones. And so I find it very difficult to see how they weren't actually in Ireland. You know, even though there's no fossil records and there's no oral records, we don't have names like Beaverton or whatever. If you've got a small, tasty mammal on an island, it's possible that it was eaten by all and sundry bigger mammals.
Right, okay.
So maybe the records were raised early on, or maybe they just never made it across.
Okay.
But I think that there's a case to be made for bringing them over.
So beavers would do well here?
Oh, I think they'd love it.
Yeah.
I think they'd love it.
That's Phelim Harty in conversation there with Lorna Siggins. By the way, if you want to go along to the Burn in Bloom Festival this weekend, you can find out details about what Phelim's talking about there and other ticketed events at burninbloom.com. Now this week, staying in Munster, at University College in Cork, the first annual Food and Beverage Finance Summit was held, bringing leaders from the worlds of food, business and finance together to discuss the issues on their minds. The conference opened with a welcome address by Professor Thea Hennessy, Dean of Cork University Business School. Delighted to say that Thea joins us from the RT studio in Cork this morning. Good morning, Thea.
Good morning, Damien. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great to have you on again. You lecture food business students down there in Cork. I'm just wondering, has your message and has the theme and the tone of your lectures, have they had to change as a result of the changing world we live in and the impact of various world and climate events?
Absolutely, Damien. We have to keep updating those lecture notes because it's such a dynamic sector. You know, there's so much happening. We had a number of years of Brexit-dominated issues around supply chains, then COVID and how that has impacted on food consumers and what they eat and where they purchase it. And just as we should be coming into a kind of a normal period, we unfortunately now have the terrible war in the Ukraine and the impact that that will have on supply chains. But like bubbling under the system all the time, Damien, is the sustainability issue. And, you know, that's not going away and it's a long term issue that needs to be tackled.
Yeah. Now, this conference this week, you had CEOs of companies that I believe between them generated 140 billion euros in annual turnover. It's a lot of food being sold. There were some really heavy hitters in the room, but they are obviously still learning as well. Well, is that what this was all about?
Yeah, the concept of this conference, Damien, was to bring together some of the leaders in food supply chains from agri inputs like Origin Enterprises right through to food retail like Musgraves and Tesco. And it was the brainchild, really, of Joe Gill, analyst with Goodbody Stockbrokers. A similar conference exists for the aviation sector where industry leaders and financiers can come together and look at the issues and look at the capital requirements of the sector and where investment should be flowing. And that was the idea, really, was to have a conference like that about food in UCC. So we were very pleased, really, with the level of contribution and the speakers we got.
OK, so it was a good think in, as it were, on the big challenges. And as you said, you know, sustainability and the environment was certainly the focus. Do you know, any agri-food conference I attend now, and we'd meet each other at many of them as well, food businesses and co-ops are telling farmers and other stakeholders that they must prove their green credentials to ensure custom in the future. Is that what you heard this week? There's no turning back. Sustainability is where it's at now, from farm to fork.
That's it, Damien. And I suppose what we really heard was that agenda has been very much being driven by the finance sector as well. So whether these companies are borrowing from banks or raising equity with private investors and institutional investors, what they're being asked for is a more sustainable system, looking at projects that are reducing carbon footprint, reducing food waste, energy consumption and all of that. So they're getting the pressure from their investors, they're getting it from their consumers, obviously, as well. And they're saying increasingly it's difficult to hire the best talent, to appoint the best executives, unless you have a really strong sustainability agenda, because they're the types of companies people want to work in.
Yeah, you know, farmers are getting an awful lot of heat, particularly the dairy and beef farmers around the country. And any time I meet them or they're on this programme, they talk about it, and even the stress levels they feel doing what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, the demands that you talk about there, they do trickle down to what farmers are going to be doing on the ground. In other words, these food companies, the CEOs that you had this week talking about what their customers desire and want in terms of sustainability, that can only be delivered if the producers on the ground are actually delivering on that as well. Isn't that true?
That's it. Absolutely. It will trickle all the way back across the supply chain in terms of what companies need to do. And I suppose, you know, we heard a lot about what the food businesses are doing themselves and equally what their suppliers are doing, whether they're farmers or growers or others. But I suppose what we also heard, which was one of the more worrying things, was that consumers expect all of this at the same price they're paying now, or a lower price. And now we're in a price inflation environment as well. And I suppose I know at the farm sector, the view would be if we're producing a more sustainable product, we should be getting a higher price for it. But we're hearing from the food retailers that consumers are just expecting higher sustainability standards at even lower prices. So that's a very difficult circle to square, I suppose.
Yeah, some of us obviously are willing to pay more. Some of us can afford to do that, and some of us can afford to shop around and buy organics. But for a lot of people that are hard pressed at the moment, they'll want the best produce to feed their children with, but they'll be looking for it at a price because of the increase in the cost of living. So as you said, it is a difficult square to circle, isn't it?
It is. And I mean, we heard that directly from the heads of the retailers. We had the head of Musgraves, the head of Tesco Global, who's a Cork man, actually talking about how their suppliers are looking to push prices up because they can't cover their input costs, which is absolutely understandable. But at the same time, they're under pressure to keep food price inflation down. So that pressure is there right across the system. And as you say, people have a certain amount of money to spend. Some of us can afford to pay more for more sustainable products, but not everybody can.
Just going back to the farmers, a lot of us are a little bit impatient in terms of seeing results of the various technologies and inputs that farmers now are adhering to try and reduce their carbon footprint. Do you think, Thea, from what you're hearing, are we going to see signs? I mean, you know, there was an EPA water quality report recently, which for the first time showed some sort of positive news. Are we going to see more of that into the future in terms of the results of what farmers and food producers are doing on the ground?
Yeah, I suppose there's two drivers here, Damien. There's what business is looking for and what will come back to farmers through cooperatives and different food processors. And then there's the government policy as well. We know with the Climate Action Bill now, we must reduce the carbon emissions from the farm sector by between 22 and 30%. We have a lot of the solutions. Chagas have shown that, but we need to get those adopted on farms. And I suppose at the moment, there's no real incentive for farmers to adopt any of those technologies or practices because there's still no limit on greenhouse gas emissions and there's no particular schemes to reward their adoption. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a combination of policy solutions driven by government and pressures coming through the supply chain from business as well.
Yeah, and of course we'll probably see more of those incentives in the new CAP proposals which are coming down the line. Food waste, another huge issue. Are we making any progress here in reducing food waste from production to consumption?
So yeah, we had some very interesting statistics. A third of all the food that's produced in the world is never consumed. Over the years, a lot of that was lost in the supply chain. There's been great progress made in that in terms of the circular economy and using, you know, food that maybe isn't fit for retail in for other sources. But what we saw was that 70% of the food waste occurs in the home by the consumer. So, like when you think of all of the challenges around producing food, to think that a third of it then is never consumed is just, it's disheartening, really.
Yeah.
So what we heard from the industry is that over 60 billion has been invested by venture capital over the last couple of years into new technologies to tackle food waste. So whether that's extending shelf life in a natural way, whether it's around packaging, and even in food retail as well, whether it's around changing consumer behaviour. So having shopping services available that people can shop more frequently, buy less, plan ahead better, but do that in a kind of a cost-effective and not a time-consuming way. So delivery options and all of that.
Yeah, we'll be hearing a little bit later on from a potato company that actually have a zero-waste policy and how they're actually doing it, because, you know, they were saying between 20 and 30% of the potatoes that are grown never make it to market, but they're actually making use of those now. So we have an awful lot to learn when we go shopping if we're going to reduce, tackle this issue of food waste here.
We do. And I mean, I'll put my own hand up. We don't consume everything in our house that we buy either. But, you know, often we only think about the financial impact of that. But, you know, increasingly we have to think of the environmental impact of buying food and not eating it.
Yeah. Well, we often examine EU and government policy in relation to sustainability and the climate agenda. Just finally, Thea, what is going to drive us to meet our climate targets? Is it policy? Is it business innovation, the people you were meeting with this week? Or is it ourselves, consumer behaviour? Who's the lead husky in the pack to pull us along here?
I suppose it'll have to be a combination of all of them, Damien. Like, we know that there's targets there under the Climate Action Bill that will need to be met, and that's under law. So there's a policy dimension. But what we heard from business over the last couple of days, that it's absolutely on the agenda at the board level in every food company. And I suppose just a takeaway quote that we had from the last couple of days that really struck home with me was that one of the chief executives said, as a chief executive of a public listed company, if I came into a board meeting and I asked my CFO, how much does it cost us to send our employees home safely from work every day? He said, I'd be fired because we just take it for granted. That's something we must do. And that's the way we're going now with climate action as well. It's something we must do and we can't talk about the cost of it.
All right.
So I thought that was a complete change in mindset, probably even in the last couple of years in food business.
Yeah, well, as I said, it's a given now. It's the rule rather than the exception that food companies, as you said, from farm to fork, from the farmer on the ground right through to the retailer and true to ourselves, sustainability is and continues to be at the centre of it all. And it is the focus of an awful lot of conferences, as I was saying earlier on, that we now attend, and good to hear that those heavy hitters in the food industry are certainly putting it front and centre. Thea, it's lovely to chat with you again, and look forward to having you on the show again in the future, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Great, thanks very much, Damien.
All right, bye. Professor Thea Hennessy there in Cork.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Get Irish Country Living, your magazine for rural Ireland, every week inside the Irish Farmers Journal.
James Maloney is an advisor with Enterprise Ireland, and he's sitting here in front of me in studio, and he's all the way from County Laois. And Laois is going to be where the Enterprise Ireland innovation stand is going to be once again this year, James, at the National Ploughing Championships, which brilliantly is coming back to Rathenisca. You're here to tell us more. Good morning, first of all.
Morning, Damien. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, so agri-tech businesses, often the unsung heroes of the Irish economy when we think about, you know, all the wonderful agri-tech companies that have done so well around the world. Tell us a little bit more about about the value of agri-tech to this country.
Yeah, it's right, Damien. We always talk about our food sector and how important it is, and our agri-tech sector is really grown in importance as well. We estimate that it probably generates about 1 billion in sales, employing about 4,500 people. So it's a huge part of the economy, particularly outside of Dublin, and it's a part of the what we see is going to be a growing sector for us as we meet the challenges with climate change, sustainability, food security. Just like your previous guest Tia was speaking about earlier.
Yeah, so we need innovation and we need agri-tech to kind of help drive along the sustainability agenda. And there is an innovation area at the Ploughing Championships, and you're looking for applicants.
Yeah, we're looking for applicants. The Innovation Arena has been for about 11 years, and for the last couple of years we've seen really, really exciting stuff coming through, like the Cotter Brothers.
They were on the show.
Started off with a sheep handling unit and now have an app to reduce antibiotic use with lambs. They won in 2019, the actual last physical event, and we've had virtual events for the last 2 years which have been brilliant, but nothing will kind of beat the hands-on.
This is an opportunity for tech innovators in the agri sphere to go along and be part of the innovation arena at the Ploughing Championships and meet international buyers and key customers.
Yeah, that's it. This year we're planning on having roughly about 100 international buyers. We've buyers secured from Brazil, Italy, Spain, Australia, New Zealand at this point. In 2019, we had 118 buyers in. And what they're really coming to look at, they're looking at what we're doing in our ag tech industry that they can potentially sell to their customers or create new supply chains or distributors for our products. We have a great reputation.
Okay, well, to give us an idea of the kind of businesses involved, and joined by winners from previous years, Oliver Kiernan is with Brandon Bioscience based in Tralee, County Kerry. But you're talking to me from the RTE at Loan Studios this morning, Oliver. You're very welcome. Tell me a little bit more about your product. Your company won the Sustainable Agricultural Award in the innovation arena a few years ago.
Thanks, Damien. Yeah, and thanks for having on the show this morning. So Brandon Bioscience, Damien, is a marine biotech company, and we're based in Tralee, County Kerry, and we produce plant biostimulants for export to 40 countries worldwide. We have research and production operations in Tralee and in Stornoway in the Hebride Islands. And our company has been working with seaweed extracts now for 23 years. And it was over this time we have we've built up a market leading expertise in research and production of biostimulants derived from seaweed and specifically Ascophyllum nodosum.
So this product was developed to help farmers reduce the amount of nitrogen that they use so they can comply with the nitrates directive and still grow a lot of grass.
Correct. Yeah. So look, as I mentioned, we have 20 years of experience in this area and the research and manufacturing of these biostimulants. So one of these products, as you mentioned, is a nitrogen use efficiency product. And we've brought that to market last year with our partners, Target Fertilizers, in the form of the Terra range of fertilizers. And fundamentally what this is, Damien, is it's a fertilizer that contains 20% less nitrogen, along with our nitrogen use efficiency biostimulant. And our research and trials have shown, as you said, that with this product, farmers can apply 20% less nitrogen and have no yield penalty.
Well, that is, you know, it dovetails perfectly with what we were discussing earlier on about, obviously, there's no looking back now. We need to find better efficiencies. So this is a way of growing more grass but using less nitrogen, which is obviously excellent. And how is business going? Are you selling more locally or internationally?
So historically, we have been an export. We export 90% of what we produce, Damien, but we were named the overall winner, as you said, of the 2021 Enterprise Ireland Innovation Arena. And for us, attending the ploughing this year would be fantastic to get face-to-face with farmers in Ireland and discuss this technology and hopefully speed up adoption of it here locally in Ireland.
Now, Jen Corley is co-founder of Equitrace, and she joins me on the line as well. Jen, good morning to you. Tell me a little bit more about your product.
Good morning, Damien. My background is as a specialist horse surgeon. My co-founder is also a specialist equine vet, and you just can't be a horse vet without realising we have some serious issues around recording horse health and tracing horse health and disease. So Equitrace allows horses' health to be traced. We have four key features that will identify them: health record, GPS and communication, and it addresses some of the biggest challenges that are coming along around welfare, medication and disease.
Okay, because so this helps reduce the possibility of giving a wrong dose to a horse.
Correct. So what's unique about us is, you know, it's linked to the horse's microchip. All horses in Ireland and increasingly around the world would have a standard microchip. To enter data, they just have to scan that 100% correct identity, and it also recognises over 1,000 different products by barcode, so they can be sure they have the right horse and the right medication and get that recorded just by pressing a button.
It's extraordinary that given how valuable horses are in the industry, is that this is a relatively new product.
Horses and technology are a difficult fit. Horses travel more than any other species apart from man. You can't keep a computer in the barn. There's a big staffing crisis and also very low levels of staff training. So to produce a product that is secure enough, simple enough, and yet sophisticated enough to crack this problem has been a challenge, but we've managed to do that with Equitrace.
Okay, so the reputation of equine sports suffer when there are findings of drugs misuse. You know, we've had high-profile cases of that happening in recent times. Sometimes that can happen by mistake, though.
It can. I think we're very hard on, I mean, rightly so. But if you think about it, if you're in hospital, you'll have an identity bracelet on. You'll still have two people come and check your name and check your date of birth before you're given a medication. In a busy yard, you know, is it any wonder that occasionally, and it's about 10% of cases, you can have the right medication, but it's being given to the wrong horse. There's also issues around withdrawal times. Trainers are responsible for working out if a horse gets medication, which they legitimately need. They're athletes, they get injuries. Then calculating the withdrawal time, making sure that animal isn't entered for competition too soon. And a lot of the error can come in there. So what we're doing is providing them top-class veterinary information there at the side of the horse, eliminating any human error, and really supporting those trainers who are trying to comply and do want clean sport, because it's so important to racing that we crack that problem.
Okay. James, just back to you. Is there a lot of support for people, particularly let's talk about young people. You talk about the Cotter brothers there, they're very young. You know, people coming out of college now with these great ideas, because, you know, the future is about sustainability, as we said, and about finding new ways to reduce the impact of food production on the environment while obviously continuing to maintain the same sort of output and meet growing demand.
Yeah, and that's the challenge. We have to maintain the output because we have rising populations and we still have to protect the environment. And the only problem we're going to find these solutions is to identify them. And that's like finding this talent, this raw talent, if you like, that have the ideas. And there's loads of support. But that's why I'd encourage everyone to apply to the Innovation Arena this year. It's a really, really short process, 2 pages. And you apply on www.innovationarena.ie or just
innovationarena.ie. Okay, yeah.
The simplest way I find it is just Google Innovation Arena and it comes up all the time. But in terms of support, we often find that a company that applies to Innovation Arena, they may not be ready for, you know, going on to world domination just at this point, but we can work with a team of mentors and advisors and develop that product. We might initially we have the right founder, but they might have the wrong product and they need a bit of tweaking on it. So we give loads of feedback, advice and mentoring. And as I say, money should not be the barrier to a good idea, and that's what we're here to help them find investors, invest ourselves, and potentially help them on their journey.
And June the 1st is the closing date, so people have a lot of. So if you have an idea, you have a little tech company, you want to be down at the ploughing and meet and get a great leg up, I suppose, innovationarena.ie for more details on that. James, thank you so much for coming in, and we wish you the very best. Looking great to see you at the ploughing. We're back in person.
And we're delighted to invite you down, Damien, as well. So just have a look at what's happening this year.
We'll be there. And Oliver Kiernan of Brandon Bioscience and Jen Corley, co-founder of Equitrace. Thank you both very much and congratulations and the very best of luck to you both into the future as well. And best of luck to everybody taking part in the Athenry Agricultural Show. It's back as well. And it's taking place at the Chagas Mellow Campus on the outskirts of Athenry Town. And that is tomorrow, the 22nd of May.
You're my little potato, you're my little potato, you're my little potato, they dug you up, you come from underground.
It's believed that the humble potato was first domesticated in South America 8,000 years ago, but it wasn't until the 1530s that it arrived in Europe, courtesy of the Spaniards. In Ireland, we consume about 2.5 times more spuds annually than the global average. But in line with global trends over the past 20 years, consumption is dropping, particularly among younger consumers.
We have huge challenges ahead.
The trend was bucked during COVID, but now there are signs that the consumption is falling again post-lockdown. This is sure to be one of the main topics discussed at the 11th World Potato Congress, which has been staged in Ireland for the very first time at the beginning of next month. Michael Hoy is the president of the Irish Potato Federation, and he'll welcome around 800 delegates from across the world to the event at the RDS in Dublin.
We saw a very encouraging trend through COVID. When people were eating more at home, they were cooking potatoes, and we were really taking on the pasta and rice market, and we were so delighted with that. But now that is tailing off again because people are back out eating on the move. They don't have the same time as they had. So consumption has been falling back, Damien. And what we would like to recapture is some of that market that we had for the last couple of years.
It all started with a couple of acres of land, 5 acres of land and a cottage my dad inherited. Literally, I suppose the story started with converting those acres into new season queen potatoes.
The Mead Farm Group, based outside Lobanstown in County Meath, has humble beginnings. Philip Mead Sr. started selling potatoes to shops and restaurants in the northeast in the 1970s. And today, the company is one of the main potato operators in the country, employing over 370 people, mostly from the surrounding area. This farm will welcome delegates on tour in 2 weeks' time, where they will be able to see how sustainability is a cornerstone of the business. Philip Mead's daughter, Eleanor, is operations manager.
Sustainability, people maybe might forget, it does come at a price and it does cost money. But for us, that was part of our decision making and a long, long time ago. It was at the kitchen table 30 years ago. How can we actually invest sustainably, and what can we do? All sorts of business decisions that we make a lot of them. You're always trying to see, is it good for the environment? Is it good for the business? Is it good for, you know, carbon footprint and so on and so forth? But yes, it does cost money, and for the customer, I do think they appreciate. They do want to know where their food comes from, and if it can be sustainably produced in Ireland, then that's a good thing.
No potato is left unused. Even the 20% not fit for the shop shelves are now being used to make starch.
The humble spud is all we've known. You know, we come from historic times with the famine and so on over the years. So for us, we wanted to see what else could we do with the potato and how can we make it a sustainable production for us and for obviously the industry. So a number of years ago in the 90s, we were actually exporting surplus potatoes to Europe for the reasoning of chipping or for starch. And so I suppose we began a journey, a research and development project in 2016 to see how can we fully utilise the potato crop? You know, how can we ensure that instead of 70-80% of the crop making it to market, how can we ensure that 100% of everything we grow has a value? So for us, it was all about getting every extra piece of value out of the potato. And that led us to basically start producing our own starch. There's nobody in Ireland or the UK producing starch as we speak. And for us, it was a great way of utilising not just our crop 100%, but for the farming industry and for the potato industry, that we can utilise any surplus crop and we can use it in a sustainable way.
All our high-grade seed was coming from really the northeast of Scotland.
Brexit has hit the potato business hard in Ireland. Seed, traditionally sourced from Scotland, is now effectively banned post-Brexit due to plant health regulations. Michael Hoy once again.
When Brexit happened, this was cut off from us. It's probably a political piece more than anything else, but it's plant health rules. And it has come to as a nasty shock to our industry, and it's something that we would like to get resolved. And it's actually quite a worry for most growers out there today.
And will that have an impact on supply over the next couple of years if it's not resolved?
I don't think it'll have an impact on supply. What it will have is an impact on quality. And as you know, Damien, people buy with their eye today. they want this perfect potato that doesn't have blemishes, with the pigment perfect. This is why we have to get as close to mother seed as possible. You're my little
potato. Just finally, Michael, when we go into a supermarket now and we see that we can buy a 5 kilo bag of potatoes cheaper than a bag of chips, do you think that, you know, it devalues the product when it's sold very cheaply in supermarkets?
This is a huge problem for our industry, as it is for the vegetable industry, that our products have been used as loss leaders by the supermarkets here, in effect, really. And when something is undervalued, like potatoes and vegetables are at the minute, and you're well aware of these 49 cent specials, etc., these are very hard for us to work out. And the Irish growers here are under severe pressure. And especially we have a huge worry for this year, because the crop has cost a lot more to grow this year, because, as you know, input costs have gone through the roof, especially fertilisers and seed, and then the diesel to put it in. It's one of the most expensive crops that can be grown. You're my little potato,
you're my little potato. And that was Michael Hoy of Country Crest, who is also president of the Irish Potato Federation. And before that, Eleanor Mead of Mead Farm Group. And both will be central to the World Potato Congress, which is taking place in Dublin in 2 weeks' time. Well, joining me now in studio is Lorcan Burke, who's sector manager of fresh produce and potatoes at Borbia, who are also one of the sponsors of the Congress. Lorcan, good morning and welcome to Countrywide.
Good morning, Damien. Good to be here.
And you're just back from Brussels, where a campaign, I believe, has been launched to promote vegetables among consumers. And Michael Hoy referred to it there, that, you know, vegetable growers and potato growers, they're under pressure.
Well, in 2015, Ireland applied under the auspices of Borbia for a EU potato promotional programme. And yeah, we put in place one that lasted for 3 years, from 2015 to 2018. It was very successful. It raised the potato sales by about 33%. To such extent, it was cooperation with the industry, but we followed it up with a second campaign, and this started in 2020. And we're in the third year of this campaign, but this one was specifically aimed at a younger generation to try to make potatoes much more exciting and relevant to millennial lifestyles, which we all know are very busy and full. Of course, the lesser appreciated thing about potatoes is that potatoes are grown in every single country in the world, practically. Yeah. So they are actually a world food. And associated with the potatoes grown in those countries as vegetables and meats. So you can actually have an international cuisine just based on potatoes. And of course, them being fat-free and gluten-free, two other aspects that are poorly appreciated, people have sort of taken them a bit for granted, I think, over the years.
Yeah, it's surprising, because we're looking for, you know, healthier food, we're looking for affordable food, and you can't look past the potato for both of those. Will you give me an overview, Lorcan, if you will, of the potato sector in Ireland? Like, how many growers do we have? You say potatoes are grown all over the world, but in Ireland, where are we?
Well, potatoes are about 25% of total horticultural production in the country. Department of Agriculture have officially registered about 700 growers, which seems an awful lot.
Yeah.
But actually, when you distill that down a piece, I think you've got a really cohort of about 300 professional growers there who are heavily invested and do what we would call commercial scale.
But how much land is under potatoes in the country? Oh, yeah.
OK, well, we've roughly 8,614 hectares, which is a production annually of over 300,000 tonnes. And a farm output value of 116 million in 2021. That realises itself into a market value of 236 million and a volume sales largely into households in Ireland of 225,000 tonnes. Now, that excludes the volume that is going through food service, which is obviously another very substantial piece.
Restaurants and hotels, yeah. And we import potatoes, though, for chips, is that right?
Chips would be fresh chips would be a key import. New season potatoes from, you'd often see those Italian Cyprus potatoes coming in, and some salad potatoes. But a lot of the people who buy chips, they think they're actually Irish potatoes.
But
our research would say that there's a shock when they find out that they're actually
okay.
Not.
So there's the fun fact of the day. When you're eating your bag of chips tonight, going home from the pub, the chances are that the potatoes they're made from are not Irish.
Well, just ask. That's the big thing, because we're trying to position Irish chips as a local food from local growers and supporting local communities.
And this Congress is happening now in a couple of weeks and Obor Beer involved in it. It's a significant event, I would presume.
Well, it's taking up a lot of our time. The Irish Potato Federation are leading on it. We're the platinum sponsors of it. From my own end, we've got Within Bloom. We're organising some great things to show the delegates coming from all over the world. And literally, they are coming from all over the world.
Yeah. Well, that's great because we're going to be in Bloom ourselves in a couple of weeks' time. And it's great that it's back again. And people that will be visiting it will be able to see that for themselves in a couple of weeks' time. Lorcan, thank you very much for joining us on the programme this morning. That's almost all we have time for this week. Today's programme is produced by Eileen Herron. Stay tuned for playback coming up after the 9 news. Ella McSweeney will be here next week. And I will talk to you, yes, live from Bloom in 2 weeks' time. But to finish on the theme of spuds, for Seamus O'Rourke, walking the Lee field at home brings back memories of the annual ritual of planting potatoes and his parents' attempts to keep up with the changing times. Until I talk to you again in a couple of weeks' time, bye-bye and thanks for listening.
Lee Ground. We called it the Pretta Field. Every year without fail we grew our potatoes there. But our soil was not renowned for food or fodder, and the earth grows tired and out of breath. Time to leave the field to rest. We would now move to Lee Ground. Time we found somewhere else, somewhere even more obscure, to cart manure and set this year's potatoes. I was only small back then. My brother in his prime at 9, he showed me how to cut the splits, the seed for the coming year. For days we sat among the wrinkled skin of last year's crop, and with the kitchen knife we slice them up, leave an eye for the sprout. Nearly every spud makes 4. We didn't make potato drills, we coped with a plough, and ridges came up straight somehow and neat. The sod tramped with our tiny feet, and dung was sandwiched in between, and splits were added to that seam, eyes up and a foot apart. That was our father's art of putting in the potatoes. This time of year when the clocks are moving and spring removes her shawl, we took out the horse plough, pulled now by tractor, no yoke, no traces, no swingle tree, just a drawbar and chain. The Ferguson 20, now to blame for not going straight. Mammy sat up top in this new grey mule, like she had sat on the handlebars of my father's bike, although in front he would lead and point and shout. My mother never learned to drive, yet sits in fear at the steering wheel, her hands clenched tight, her knuckles white, memorising her left from right and the names of lesser saints. The sock points towards the earth. My father takes in breath, stands tall and grabs the pierced plough. My mother somehow finds first gear, stands hard on clutch and brake. If the baby cries, a pram will shake and dance above on the headland. Her life in this Pretta field, her man, her pram, her boys, and her eldest bringing tea. Let up your foot, my father shouts, control tower to pilot and barking sounds, a step-by-step guide to coping in Lee Ground. It will all be over by milking time. The cortege moves slowly up the hill, the sod turned and creased and tramped, the pilot fretting at the steering wheel. The nearing shop is nigh. Which way will I turn, she says. I say, Jim. Only in emergency did she ever use his name.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Pick up this week's paper to find out what the future of your farm payments will look like.